Let me tell you of the days of high adventure.
I'm Kevin.
And I am Eric.
And this is 6 Degrees of Schwarzenegger, the podcast where we take a long, hard look back at some of our favorite action movies from the era of Arnold.
Schwarzenegger is the icon of the genre, and we're taking a deep dive into some of these 80s and 90s cult action movies and breaking them all the way down. Kevin, how are you this evening?
I'm good, Eric. How are you doing?
I'm doing really well. I'm super excited about this one.
We're back to kick off a brand new movie.
Yeah.
One that was not, I think, very near or dear to either of us growing up. No. It didn't get a lot of TV play.
Right, exactly.
I think probably because it's kind of bad, but it's kind of awesomely bad.
I mean, yeah.
But yeah, we're here to talk about Action Jackson.
Oh, man.
It is Carl Weathers' first, I think, like shot at a starring role in a movie, and is only really shot at a big time Hollywood project, like a budgeted movie with a cast and a producer behind it.
Joel Silver produced it. This was the real deal. You know,
Joel Silver was as big in the action genre as you could get. He was Cecil B. DeMille of action movies. Yeah. Right. I'll skip straight to his resume because it's incredible. He had done 48 Hours was his breakthrough thing. Then he did Commando. He did Lethal Weapon and all those sequels. Predator and those sequels. Die Hard and those sequels. Roadhouse, Last Boy Scout, Demolition Man. He did the Matrix movies.
Matrix, yeah.
Yeah, I think he still is working now and then, but he's slowed down for sure.
I mean, as a producer, the man is impeccable taste. I mean, he knew how to pick action movies.
And he did a lot of non-action stuff too that was pretty good. Yeah. But when I think action producers, it's him and then Bruckheimer and Don Simpson, that team.
R.I.P. Yeah. Don Simpson.
Directed by a dude named Craig R. Baxley, who I regret to report is not a great director.
Although, great last name, though.
Baxley, you like that?
Anytime you can get an X into your last name, I think it's a win.
This is his first ever movie that he directed.
Yeah.
So he's probably sort of still learning. He had directed some episodes of the A-Team, apparently.
Oh, I mean, that explains so much to me.
Yeah. He also had been second unit director and stunt director on some big stuff, including Predator.
Okay.
Which there's a lot of ties between this movie and Predator as we'll discuss.
Yeah.
And he went on to direct a movie called Stone Cold. Did you ever watch that with Brian Bosworth? It was an action movie, terrible one.
I want to say yes, but I'm not getting a mental picture right now.
And then he watched one that I haven't seen, a Dolph Lundgren movie called Dark Angel.
Yeah, okay, Dark Angel.
There was a Christmas movie with an alien, a killer alien from out of space.
Yeah,
and Dolph Lundgren's fighting him at Christmas time or something.
It's a nonsensical movie.
It's one I need to see for sure.
Yeah, for sure. We should do a Christmas viewing. Save it for the season.
Yeah, a Christmas episode. Screenplay is by a dude named Robert Renault. Who the only other thing that he did that I recognized was he wrote Demolition Man.
Oh, well, shit, that's enough for me.
That's a pretty legendary action movie.
Yeah, legend right there.
We'll get to at some point here.
One of these days.
Music, interestingly, by Michael Kamen and Herbie Hancock.
I love it. I love seeing Herbie Hancock on an action movie soundtrack.
It's crazy. But what I had read was that Herbie Hancock, basically, he composed the main theme.
Okay.
And then maybe came and did the rest. But a famous legendary jazz musician, has won 14 Grammys, according to Wikipedia. God. He also won an Oscar for Best Original Score for a movie called Round Midnight. Mm. Which I don't think I've ever seen.
No, I've not seen that one.
But Kamen is action movie royalty. He wrote the themes and all that for Lethal Weapon, for Die Hard, Roadhouse, Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. Man, I don't usually mention the cinematographer, but I'll shout out this guy, Matthew F. Leonetti.
Mm-hmm.
He had been the cinematographer on Commando, Red Heat, action movie guy. He'd also done Poltergeist and Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Wow, he did Poltergeist. That's... So this guy has some. This guy has some cred. This is the thing that shocks me about this movie. The on-screen talent and the behind-the-camera talent is overwhelming in a lot of instances, right? I mean, screenplay and the director, okay, maybe not. Or the screenwriter and the director, maybe not. But everybody else has gone on to do these incredibly important things. So you look at this list of talent, you're like, well, this is going to be an instant classic.
And you find yourself asking as you watch, like, how did it turn out like this?
Yeah. Exactly.
And the editor, who we don't also usually mention, was a guy named Mark Helfrich, who edited Rambo 2 and Predator and Last Boy Scout, Nowhere to Run, Striking Distance, like other good movies. He edited the new Jumanji movies as well.
Really?
So he's like still working.
So he's still working.
Yeah.
And those are decent movies. I enjoyed both of those.
Yeah. So starring the inevitable Carl Weathers. This is our Carl Weathers tribute.
It is.
Recently deceased. Rest in peace to Carl Weathers.
Rest
I think
peace, yeah.
There's a Carl Weathers retrospective on the Last of the Action Heroes podcast network that you guys should all check
Definitely
out.
Check it out.
It was fun for me to listen to because it's just interesting how this guy who was a supporting character guy had just had such an impact on so many of people from our generation's like childhoods, and everything like that. Like,
I mean, I've known Carl Weathers for as long as I've known action movies, for as long as I've known 80s movies. I mean, he's an absolute like presence no matter where you look. And like you said at the top, it amazes me that this guy didn't go on to have the same career that Schwarzenegger had.
Because
right?
he's got, I mean, this movie notwithstanding, you see him in other movies and you're like, oh, he's got the charisma and he's got the acting chops. He can be funny. He's got the physique.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It didn't really make sense other than the racism of within the industry.
Unfortunately,
the
that's
time,
probably
you know,
played
or,
it, yeah.
Or still to this day. But I mean, we're talking about Apollo Creed, talking about Dylan from Predator, and then the stuff he did with Star Wars and Mandalorian. Awesome.
Arrested Development.
Oh, yeah, Arrested
just
Development.
Like him just parodying himself so brilliantly.
I mean, it's great. So it's good for us to have this perfect opportunity to sort of heap some praise on him and a little tough love.
Well, also, while also having fun just talking about this wonderfully horrible movie.
Also features Craig T. Nelson as the bad guy, Peter Delaplane. But I'm not a big Craig T. Nelson guy. I never watched Coach. I know that was like his big claim to fame. I remember he was the dad in Poltergeist. I remember that.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know a lot about him either. Yeah, exactly.
He does fine. And he acquits himself well as like an evil, smarmy, dude.
I will say he clearly was enjoying being this evil, right? I mean, he leaned into the evilness of this role.
Yeah.
Not that there was really a lot of depth for this guy, but he was enjoying being evil. You could absolutely tell.
We're going to have some fun when we get down to what his actual like motivations are, because it's muddled at best. I'm not sure he even knows
exactly
what his scheme is here. But it also stars Vanity, the singer, entertainer, as Sydney Ash, who that's probably the last time we'll say her name, because in this movie we just call her Vanity. I couldn't tell you any characters' names in this movie other than Action Jackson and Delaplane.
Right. I know. And that's always like one of the earmarks or symptoms or precursors or foreshadowing of a great bad movie, right? Like, you know every beat about it, but you can't tell anybody of what their character names are.
And this movie's problem is it has so many characters.
Oh, there's so many characters.
It's like no one could keep track of the names of these people. But Vanity, we know she was in The Last Dragon, the love interest in there. She was like a singer. I think she was discovered by Prince.
Oh, really?
And Prince like made her into a pop star for a time in the 80s. Then she went, I think she had drug problems, like maybe based on this movie's, like, or I don't know. Her character has those problems. But then she got out of acting and now she's like some sort of an evangelical Christian. Actually, now she's passed away, I think.
Oh, really? Okay.
But she's disavowed all of her work while she was, doing movies and all that. It also stars Sharon Stone, dude,
very young Sharon Stone. And it's one of these things like, wow, like just what a knockout she was.
Yeah, she was incredible.
Yeah.
And went on to, of course, like mega fame.
Oh, yeah.
After this. Yeah. But too many movies to list. But she was in Total Recall and The Specialist. So she worked with Arnold and with Stallone.
Mm-hmm.
And then the only other person I'll shout out right now is Bill Duke. as Captain Arm Brewster. But he's just, he's Bill Duke to me.
Yeah.
I see him, hey, this is Bill Duke. But he's in Commando and in Predator also. And he's very prolific also as like a director and producer of things. But he's like an actor. His actor, I feel like. He's like a Broadway type, like classically trained guy.
Am I crazy or did he pass away as well?
I hope not.
Hold on.
I think not. He's one of the few ever celebrities that retweeted something off the Six Degrees of Schwarzenegger podcast Twitter account.
How awesome is that?
Yeah, we might try him again for this movie.
I'm happy to report that he is still alive.
Okay,
Thank the Lord. Okay.
Hang out, Bill Duke. We love you. But dude, more so, I was telling you this before we started, more so than any movie I've ever seen, this movie was just like cobbled together out of like recycled parts from other action movies. Like the cast and the crew, the genre tropes. I can't really point to anything original in this whole movie, to be honest.
No.
But we're going to, like, every single face that popped up is like, hey, that's a familiar face. He's been in three other action movies. Like better, you know, three other big action movies.
Yeah, yeah.
It's amazing. I've never seen a movie that had this many of those familiar faces, the character actors and the stunt men.
I mean, if you brought in Schwarzenegger into this, it could have just been called Predator 2.
Yes.
I mean, it is a little bit insane.
It's nuts. But we'll dive into the movie. So it opens with that Warner Brothers logo, which is usually a sign of quality. It's nighttime in Detroit. There's a helicopter flying towards like a high rise. It's a very Lethal Weapon-ish opening. I think it opened the same way with a helicopter flying around in the city at night or whatever. But so we got, I guess, this like businessman.
It's never clear to me what exactly he's doing in this
office.
He's
in an office. He might be wearing a tie. I can't remember really, but
what he reminded me of is like a coked up finance bro circa the mid-80s, right?
For sure.
But like, you know,
disheveled a little, wired. But he's
definitely on coke.
This dude, he was dictating this statement to his secretary. And both of these two were in Lethal Weapon.
Yes, they both were. Yeah.
The dude was the guy who burned Mr. Joshua's arm, was forced to burn his arm with a cigarette lighter. And then the woman was like the police psychiatrist lady.
Yep.
But she was also the reporter in Die Hard.
Yep, she was.
She was the mom in the Goonies.
Yep.
Like, she's just been in a ton of movies. You would recognize her for sure.
She's just one of those working character actors that you know and
absolutely
never remember her name.
And you know what? There's a movie called Ricochet that I haven't seen, but I think we need to do on the podcast.
Okay.
Because it's a Denzel Washington starring action movie produced by Silver. And that woman's in it playing the same character, I think, is her character in Die Hard. Like the same.
Oh, really?
She like had the same name. Like Gail. I haven't seen it side to side, but she's like, she plays Gail Wallen, which is her character from Die Hard. So I'm like, oh, is this a movie happening in the Die Hard universe?
All right. The greater Die Hard expanded universe, like like Marvel.
It's one of the action movies. There's a few of them with John Lithgow as the big bad guy.
Yeah.
Who is like, he strikes you as an evil genius, but not like a heavy, like not a tough guy.
Yeah. I mean, he did a lot of heel turns before he found Third Rock.
He's good at it.
Yeah.
He's real good at it. There's definitely a bit in that movie though, where this famous, where Denzel Washington is in a Mexican standoff and he takes all his clothes off for some reason. So he's in there in his underwear to show, I think that maybe he doesn't have a gun or something. And then he's like, now look, the only gun I have left is not going to do any good unless you're a pretty girl. And it's just like, what the fuck is happening? I feel like that's like in the cold open to the movie.
It's on
Max, HBO Max. Right. So I tried to watch it. I fell asleep almost immediately, but I might try it again. We should get to it at some point because I think I saw it once before and I think it's actually a good one.
Okay.
And it's cool to see Denzel before he got to be Denzel.
Yeah.
You know, like first name famous.
Although I gotta be honest, man. I mean, if you haven't seen the Equalizer movies, you got to check those out.
Those are rad, dude.
Yeah.
I went to go see 3. I think I don't even know why I went to go see it. I think I was just bored and wanted to go to the movies. And that movie was worth it just for the scenery alone of
Italy and
Italian village and everything like that. Yeah. Awesome movie.
I love that. My favorite of all, and we're getting way off track.
No,
but
do
fine.
It.
That my favorite of all those is the one where, I think it's the first one where he walks into the Russian mafia, like hangout in the back of a club. and then says, all right, I'm going to give you, and this is his shtick, right? If you haven't seen the movies, his shtick is always gives the bad guys X number of minutes to like recant their sins before he murders all of them. Yes. And he gives them the time window. And then they, of course, don't agree with him. Uh-huh. And then he murders all of them. And it is such a great action sequence. Yeah. It's so amazing. Yeah, you got to watch Equalizer movies.
That third one was super violent.
Oh, like it was.
The level of violence was wild.
I forgot Pedro Pascal was the big bad in two, and so I went back and watched it. I'm like, oh my God, it's Pedro Pascal.
I don't think I ever saw two. I think I saw one and three.
Yeah. Two is good too. It's very different because it's like, it's more him versus people who know him. So it's not like just street thugs. It's like it's his ex-military bros.
Okay.
So it's a slightly different vibe. There's more like betrayal and there's more intrigue than the other ones. But it's still really good.
Yeah, I'm into those. So sometimes you need those. We need those movies.
Oh yeah.
Just like a genre picture, a revenge plot, like, you know, John Wick is gone now. So we need those movies that come just very simple action stories.
Yeah. Oh,
they
can
still be awesome if they're well done.
And it's a great character. I mean, Denzel is just such a phenomenal actor and just playing that kind of smoldering, like singularly focused character. I mean, he nails it.
Yeah.
Those are such fun movies.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to action, Jax.
So we got this guy. He's dictating a message to the secretary.
Yeah.
The message is apparently just for an esteemed colleague. We don't know, but it's regarding the death of a mutual coworker named Samuel Norman. It's really not important. The businessman says that since this Norman guy's death, the Auto Workers Alliance has made a recovery and will continue to improve going forward. This movie's plot is like exceptionally flimsy.
Yeah.
This is the beginnings of it, I guess. So just then they both hear this like ominous thud up on the roof or something.
So how high up are they? I mean, they
must be on the top, right?
Well, I've worked like at the very top floor of sky rises. You can't hear what's on the roof. It's not like,
that's true.
Thin thing. So it's just like,
there's usually like attics above you.
Exactly. Or
but they did have skylights in the roof. So they must be like, they must be in some sort of
corner penthouse
area, right? Where the outside is like directly above.
But
the dude, he seems a little concerned. And then the secretary says, it's probably my date, which doesn't really make sense. Like, is this supposed to be like a hilarious joke?
I don't know.
But the businessman, he then switches over to sexual harassment mode. He starts like massaging her shoulders and telling her, why are you in such a hurry to leave? And then she seems like she's not into it.
I know, exactly. But this is the 80s where it's just like, who knows if she was just fawning. I just appreciate the boxing match in the background as sort of a counterpoint to all of this.
She's like, you couldn't have anything better in mind, and he's like, oh yes I do, and then he like goes for the TV remote.
That's right.
Like, let me turn on the TV.
That's right.
Let's watch some TV together. So it's not working, the remote, and the secretary walks over, and this place is just oddly decorated.
It is so weird. It's so 80s. It's the most 80s decorated office you could possibly imagine.
It was like, over on this shelf is like the Encyclopedia Britannica, and then on this side was like this porno set dress, like looking bar set, like with like red, green, blue, like lighting scheme going on or whatever on it. So she turns on the TV and it's a boxing match on, and then she's like, ugh, like, and he's like, what, you got a problem with violence? Which I think was supposed to be this like self-referential
jokey foreshadowing,
like that. But so now they hear more noise on the roof, and the secretary then she screams as several dudes like dressed in all black come rappelling in through the windows. One of the dudes kicks the secretary through a pane of glass, apparently killing her.
Yeah, well, I mean, the way I watched it, it looked like he kicked her directly in the face.
Yeah.
Like, this wasn't a chest kick.
It could break a neck or
something.
Yeah,
like he broke her neck
that.
Or rammed his foot, her nose into her brain or something
one
like
of
that.
Oh, yeah, we love that. Yeah. That's like one of those things that is like just an action movie trope.
Right,
like,
exactly.
It can happen. Every kid in like second to third or fourth grade like knew that was a thing that could happen.
Oh yeah, careful. Your nose could go
into
your brain.
Did you know
brain.
That you can shove someone's nose up into their brain? we're going to have to do Last Boy Scout because that's the movie that features prominently in.
Yep.
So we'll put that one on the list. But yeah, she's apparently dead from this. Now the businessman, he scrambles to retrieve a gun from his jacket on the coat rack, where when he turns back, there's no one there, but like dude just apparently keeps a loose pistol.
I mean, again, like my answer to a lot of these sort of unanswered questions is it was the 80s.
Yeah, sure. It was Detroit. It was Detroit in the 80s. Come on.
Why not, man?
But he gets spooked. He turns to the left and the right and he's like shooting him, but there's nobody there. But or maybe there were. There were definitely silhouettes in the background.
Yeah, and then it's like,
but the thing about these bad guys, as we'll come to find, is there's something like ninja-like about them. Like they're almost, they can become invisible or some shit.
Which is not ever explained, as we will discover. But that's fine. That's fine.
We don't need it. So then his desk started like moving forward. Like they were like, I guess the dudes were hiding behind it, which got an unintentional laugh from me because it's just so cheesy. But the businessman, he shoots up the desk some. He's backing towards the door out of his office. Now, just then another long-haired goon comes down through the skylight and kicks him through the door. For a split second, I thought it was Carl from Die Hard, but it's not.
The different
sadly.
Blonde guy with long...
Yeah. So now the businessman, he gets up, he runs down the hallway towards the exit. Another guy materializes with a butterfly knife, and he throws it through the businessman's hand while he's reaching for the doorknob or whatever. Now, we've had a run of movies with butterfly knives since you joined the podcast.
Oh, yeah. I know. It's a little bit crazy. Face Off and Red Dawn, at least.
Yeah, I don't think Conan had butterfly knives.
I mean, it should have. But yeah, three of the four that I've been a part of, butterfly knives have... It's featured prominently.
Awesome. It's my favorite thing in the world because it's like, it's like not even a, it looks amazing, right? But it's not as efficient as just having a fixed blade that you can just pull out and throw. It's like takes you a second to get it ready. But
right.
So the businessman, he pulls the knife out of his hand, opens the door. There's yet another goon out there waiting to punch him in the face. And it's Eddie from Die Hard.
That's right.
The dude, the guy who like got stuck down at the security desk when the terrorists took over the building. So now the businessman, he stumbles away as the four goons kind of stalk him around the office. He's hitting the button for the elevator to come, but he turns and he sees they've all sort of got him cornered. One of them whips out this massive gun that and then shoots at him, and it like he flies back through the window and bursts into flames like it shot some sort of exploding thing.
It looked
like
a grenade launcher to
me. Yeah, it was something like that. It was also unintentionally hilarious when it happened. It was just so much the burning body falling from the sky was awesome. But then it goes through the skylight into a crowded restaurant like down below, which the moment was hella campy.
Yeah.
But like that was a rad stunt.
It was a good stunt.
Because that was a really like dude on fire falling through the window at least. It was clearly a mannequin or dummy or something falling off the roof, but it was pretty rad.
Yeah.
So cut to 80s pop music blasting over like a Detroit montage. It's the Beverly Hills Cop opening, is the way I think of it. And it's the song is called He Turned Me Out by the Pointer Sisters. Which I'm like, the fuck?
I don't know what that meant in the 80s. But
is that a song about like a pimp turning out a prostitute?
I mean, that is the way that I'm reading it. Yes.
I don't know. But is the Pointer Sisters, who also did the Neutron Dance song from Beverly Hills Cop, the one during the big chase in the beginning. I loved that. I've watched like Beverly Hills Cop probably three times in the past week.
Oh God.
I'm just like obsessed with how good it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cause
really
it kind of reminds
great.
Me of this movie in some ways. It's just like a Detroit Cop vibes.
Yeah.
But a shitty version, but they're trying, I feel like they're aspiring to capture that Beverly Hills Cop energy.
I think there's a lot of truth to that. Yeah.
Yeah. Now we're on board the public transit train. This tattered like hoodlum character is watching a rich woman who's just counting a wad of $100 bills on the train.
Who does this? I mean, even in the, especially in the 80s, who is doing that?
The guy gets this big grin on his face, like, I'm definitely stealing this woman's money, until this cop sort of sidles up beside him. And then, so then we see the hoodlum, he's just sort of wandering the street looking for his next opportunity. He's dressed kind of exactly like Axel Foley was in the beginning of Beverly Hills Cop, like sleeveless tee with jeans or whatever. And this character is like the most heavily featured and completely inconsequential character in the history of this podcast, for sure. I can't remember any movie where a character got this much screen time and he contributes nothing to the plot of the movie ever.
You can
I'm not just being mean, like literally his character doesn't do anything. He's just an observer.
I mean, the only thing that I could say that he could possibly contribute is the scene coming up, which gives the two beat cops an excuse to sort of set the the tone.
Okay.
For Jericho Jackson, Jericho Action Jackson.
Yeah.
But then after that, he never needs to be in the movie again.
No.
Right. And even that's a stretch, frankly.
It is. So we cut to inside a police car. There's a cop. It's Thomas F. Wilson. That's Biff from fucking Back to the Future.
Biff motherfucking Tannen.
Saying to his partner, it was a regular fuckorama at my place last night. Biff Tannen coming in hot. That was crazy to me. That also made me howl, I think, when he said it. Because not because it's funny, but because it's like, oh, I never heard Biff cuss before.
Yep.
I've barely seen Biff in anything else.
Yep.
It was awesome to see him doing something.
Yeah.
So his partner seems doubtful, though. He's like, there hasn't been any pussy in your pad since your mother helped you move in. They ought to call your place the House of Wax. And does this, like, jerk-off motion or whatever. Decent joke.
Yeah.
Because we have to call out the good ones while we can.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. You have to celebrate the wins.
This movie's got, I feel like, a 90% miss rate on the jokes, at least. His partner had this really, like, overly articulate, like, enunciated way of speaking where he'd be like, let me remind you.
Yeah.
Like, sort of, or something like that. You know, there has not been a woman in your place. It was just, he reminded me of Brother Muzzone from The Wire.
Sure.
But just like, it's just very, like, overly enunciated way of speaking.
The thing that I immediately got vibes of is this a guy who graduated from Juilliard
yeah.
and fancied himself a theater actor.
He probably was playing like Othello the week before he came on this thing.
Right, exactly.
Know? Exactly. We should mention this character is black because he gets right down to some racial profiling here right along with the white guy. But like, I think, what was it? Was it Fuck the Police where they talk about like the black cops are trying to, you know, like show off for the white cops?
Yeah.
But like, look, I'll be racist too.
I mean, it's a classic moment like that for that. Yeah.
So, because we got this, the would-be thief, the hoodlum character, he's looking for the right pocket to pick when he spots this woman who's built like a fucking, you know, like a linebacker. Oh my God. Or something. He's huge. I was like, it's clearly a dude.
Oh, yeah.
And I was happy to look it up and see that it was like a stuntman.
Yeah.
It was like a dude. He was in, he was one of like the orderlies in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest or something like that.
Like, I think I know exactly which character that is.
Like
a
burly black dude. But of all the people on the street, this hoodlum chooses like the most formidable looking woman. Is like, this is my shot.
I mean, she's towering over him, is twice his width and depth. I mean,
she was probably like 275, like bold, like stocky.
This guy, this hoodlum could have crawled inside of her and could have lived comfortably in there. Like, that is the size differential between these two people.
So he starts following her, and he's immediately spotted by the cops, who remark on how guilty he looks, even though he hasn't done anything
wrong.
And then how stupid he must be to rob a person right in front of a cop car, even though he hasn't done. The last part is true, but the first part is like very much like racial profiling. Like, look how guilty this dude is. And the partner's like, this boy would have to go to college for 4 years to reach the level of shit for brains. So I'm like, damn, they're going in on him. But the hoodlum, he tries to run past the woman and snatch the purse. But she holds onto it and yanks him back flat on his back and starts beating the shit out of him. And the cops decide to just like let it happen. You know, they're like, no. Well, let's let it happen before we like step in. And then Biff said a line, something about like calling the meat wagon.
Yeah.
Which was a famous expression from Beverly Hills Cop. But in my mind, it's like the what they would come to like haul a dead body away in. So I don't know if they just wanted to use the expression.
Well, you mentioned that the hoodlum looks like Axel Foley to me. And I'm wondering if it's like a subtle jab at,
I don't know if it's a jab or like an homage, like we wish we were this.
Yeah, well, maybe.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But so later on, Biff and his partner are driving that hoodlum to the station to be booked, and they're verbally harassing him and insulting him and trying to intimidate him. And they're telling him, you know, we're going to let you be interrogated by Action Jackson. And the partner is like insinuating that he must be inbred because he's so stupid and all this shit. Like, your parents were probably brother and sister. This also has to come close to the record for the shortest time into a movie when the title of the movie is said out loud.
Oh yeah, exactly. Time to title is very short on this one.
The rule of the podcast, people, if you don't know, is that once someone says the title of the movie out loud, you're allowed to walk away if you feel like it. That's like, that's too much. That's too much to bear. This movie might be one where you, behoove yourself to walk away.
Just walk away.
Just walk away.
Just walk away.
I would walk away and watch The Road Warrior again, actually.
Oh,
so,
fuck yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So the Hood, he wants to know who's Action Jackson. And the cops start scaring him with these stories about how tough and brutal Action Jackson is. And Biff says, yeah, Bigfoot raped Action Jackson's mom and he's their mutant offspring. What?
I mean, the things that they say to set up this character is ridiculous. I mean, it's just absolutely absurd. If I were the hoodlum in the back of that car, I'd go, you guys are just morons. Like, this is so over the top.
The other dude is like, you know, when this one guy was facing Action Jackson, his balls retracted back up into his belly and they never came back down. Whatever. But he says this rumor had it that one guy chewed his own hand off to get out of his handcuffs to get away from Action Jackson. So then cut to, they're walking the hoodlum through the police station, telling more tall tales, say he's not allowed to carry a gun because he's too violent. And back in the good old days where police brutality was celebrated.
Yeah, exactly. This is like right in the height of, oh, those cops. Cops will be cops.
Yeah, this is a pre-Rodney King world.
Yeah.
But so now when Action Jackson gets carried away, they say they got to shoot him with a tranquilizer dart like an animal in the zoo or whatever. They walk past the ubiquitous hooker section, which every 80s like squad room had to have a section where just a bunch of scantily clad women are being interviewed or booked or whatever they're doing. Yeah. And one of the cops like catcalls at one of the hookers, which is very weird. So they plop the hoodlum down as he's like nervously looking around for Action Jackson. Then the non-Biff cop, he immediately starts harassing one of the prostitutes. He's like, goes over, how much for a hand job? He says, like, my partner's, he sprained his wrist. It's like just wild misconduct.
Oh, just absolutely. Like, she could walk out of that police station owning the entire station if that was done today.
So then she says, how about a foot job instead? And Biff is like, well, how much is that? And she just kicks it. Like, it's like, it's for you. It's free. Bam. Kick him in the balls. That's felony assault of a police officer.
I know.
You're making your situation worse. And in the ensuing chaos, the hoodlum makes a run for it. He's scrambling over the tops of desks. He's making his own situation worse. A dozen cops, though, they can't catch this guy. He's running all over. He finally gets he crashes into a cop with a pot of coffee, and the guy breaks the coffee pot over the desk of Sergeant Jericho Jackson, who gives the hood a really hard look and says, mellow out.
I cannot believe that was his first line.
The
in
mellow
this movie.
Out. That's a weird line.
Oh my God.
I don't even know, but the hoodlum just faints out of pure fear. And then one of the guys is like, you did it again, Jackson. But he was like, man, he was busy whiting out like a form or something like that. Yeah, exactly. It's like, holy shit.
He was just doing paperwork. Like the most mundane, all of the shit that these beat cops have been building him up to be. And the first time we see him, he's just doing paperwork at his desk.
And kids who are out there listening, Whiteout was this product that if you used to have to type something out and you had a little paintbrush of white liquid that you spread over your mistakes. I feel like we're in a generation now that no one's ever heard of Whiteout.
Oh, yeah, yeah, for sure. The only thing I ever used Whiteout for was sniffing it. So,
well, I was a good boy, so I didn't do any of that. But yeah, it was just like, that was a weird call, just a blast from the past that you get in these movies that I feel like are things that's going to be lost to time.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
What the fuck is Whiteout?
It is weird imagining one of a younger audience member who may have never even written anything on a sheet of paper for all I know at this point, because I haven't written anything on a sheet of paper in 15 years, right?
Like, I don't think they teach cursive writing
in
school
exactly.
anymore.
I mean, it's just a completely different world.
I remember there being something about the generation of people who didn't know how, didn't have a signature. They didn't really know how to sign their name because they never had learned cursive.
Right.
So they would just write their name out in print. And it's like,
why not? Yeah. I mean,
I guess so.
But it's crazy to me for people to watch this and go, what is he doing? Legitimately have no context for what's going on.
I mean, if you were born post 2000, you're probably like, what the fuck is, what's that stuff he's doing there? What is that? And the things that people say are just like, what?
Right. Exactly.
But so later on, there's another detective. He's giving Jackson a hard time about being stuck on desk duty. And that guy was also a prominent character in Lethal Weapon.
Mm-hmm.
And he was also, the dude he was talking to was like the leader of the SWAT team from Die Hard.
Yep.
And just like, oh, look, it's that dude from Die Hard. Like, bringing the car.
Bringing the car. Through clenched teeth. Yeah.
So Jackson gives that detective shit about some recent arrest that he made. It was too easy. And we learn that these two used to be partners. And I don't know. I want to say maybe it's the writing, but I'm not in love with Carl Weathers' performance. Like, but it's also because the jokes aren't funny.
No, they're not.
It's like, oh, Carl Weathers, he's stinking it up. But I feel like it's just because he's delivering the worst dialogue ever put on pages.
I mean, there's only so much you can do, right? Like, yeah. It's just, you can be a Shakespearean quality actor, but some of the lines that he had to say in this movie, yeah. It's like, what are you supposed to do with this?
It's
how
tough,
do you
man.
Deliver this?
So Action Jackson, he's pissed. He glares across the squad room, and that hoodlum is like across the way. He faints again. It's still not really any funnier the second time.
No, it's not
winning.
It was
the first time.
Right.
The reason why this gag doesn't work for me is because Action Jackson, he's not a threatening, mean guy.
No.
He's not done. It's not a bad thing.
Right.
But this dude is like terrified of him. He's like, Action Jackson's wearing like a peach colored shirt.
Right. Exactly.
You know, it's like he's not. Yeah. All that this kid has heard is like tall tales.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. That's, and from Biff Tannen.
Bullshit from Biff Tannen.
Right.
And he's
and
like
the guy
scared
who's playing
shitless.
Off Broadway.
Yeah. Yeah. So it just, I don't know. It just wasn't really working.
No, it was super weak. It was like, as a running gag, it was the worst setup you could possibly imagine.
So now Jackson, he's trying to listen in on what's happening in the captain's office. And the ex-partner is basically explaining to the captain, who's Bill Duke, that they have no leads on the double murder, the thing we saw in the opening scene. It's like, no leads? Okay, maybe. But then he says there wasn't even enough left to perform an autopsy. That can't be true.
So what did they do to that woman when they went back into the office, right?
Well, they say she was dead. So I'm like, did she get killed from that one kick we saw, or did like she just get left up there?
As we famously established, your nose can go into your brain, Kevin.
Yes, it's true. It happens. It happens all the time. Then he says, it's as if the killer was invisible. Which is planting a seed for later on, I guess.
Oh, yeah. No, we love the foreshadowing in this movie.
But so that ex-partner, he goes on to say, you know, there's no evidence that the man and the woman had sex, which he called the old protein pickup.
Could someone explain to me what that means? Like, has anybody ever heard this? Okay, this is
That's not an expression. That's not an expression that exists.
I mean, I don't even know what, like, he's trying to imply.
Is the protein, like, the jizz?
I would assume so. But
yeah, I don't know.
I mean, we could dissect that one random fake idiom like to our blue in the face.
Yeah, it was just weird phrasing.
Yeah.
So Bill Duke, he doesn't appreciate the off-color comment, or maybe he just doesn't appreciate.
I think he's confused.
Why are you making up phrases? Don't do that anymore. I warned you about that.
Look, I'm so tired about your balloon shoes. Like, I don't care about the. I don't know what you're talking about.
Like, stop trying to make protein pickup happen. Okay. No, I think the idea is that Bill Duke's uptight.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's what we're trying to get at here.
So the ex-partner, then he walks out of the office. Action Jackson and them, they needle each other a little bit more. He mentions some sort of fuck up that Action Jackson had in his past that wrecked his career. Then the ex-partner sees that hoodlum had fainted across the way, and he asks Action Jackson if he had threatened to white him out. And Action Jackson says, no, I just showed him a picture of your girlfriend, which is like very high school level, like the quips, antagonizing.
Right. I mean, the quips are just not landing on any of this.
It's corny jokes. Then the corny music plays as if it's like a cartoon, like cartoon music.
Yeah.
Almost.
Yeah, it is. It's like a circus song or something.
Yeah,
like
it's just weird. It's something
bizarre.
You would hear like in Looney Tunes.
Right. Exactly.
But so Action Jackson strolls into Bill Duke's office where it seems like he's in trouble for something. I don't know, but it's revealed that Action Jackson got demoted from lieutenant to sergeant 2 years ago, and he's been basically like languishing on desk duty.
Mm-hmm.
Then Bill Duke says, you're the most dedicated policeman I've ever seen. You got, you know, I know that you have a lot of pride and you have a lot to be proud of. It's a series of non sequiturs. Like there's no connection between the things he's saying.
No.
Then he remarks that you were a high school track star. And a Harvard law graduate. Well, I don't even understand why you want to be a cop. Which Harvard Law School made me laugh out loud. So I'm like, what the fuck? Don't go to Harvard Law to then become a police detective.
Right, exactly. No, that just doesn't happen. Like something went, I mean, the fact that they had to specify that he was a graduate implies to me that it's like, oh, we can't just say he went there because everybody's just going to assume he dropped out. We have to emphasize that he graduated from Harvard Law.
Which, also, why are you leading with high school track star?
I know.
And then you follow, and you also went to Harvard Law
School. Oh, my God. I know. The Harvard Law was like a close second to high school track star.
I feel like the world's full of fucking high school track stars, right? Like, there's a million high school track stars that look just like you and me, like, out there, you know? That's like, they should have said he was an Olympian or something, or like you were whatever, you know, college champion track star or something.
I was just getting weird Al Bundy vibes from all of this.
Yes, you know, four touchdowns in a single game. That shit. But so Bill Duke says that, I know, you know, Action Jackson, I know you don't like this tedious desk work shit, but it's important work. Then he tells him that you need to go represent the department tonight at the Detroit Business Leaders Man of the Year banquet. I was scheduled to attend, but I had forgotten that this is my wife's Parcheesi night. That's the only intentional laugh, I think, for me in the whole movie.
For me, so much of it is just the way that Bill Duke delivers the line. Yes. He spits it through clenched teeth, and it is absolutely a riot. Yeah.
I feel like Bill Duke, he was digging deep, I think, to try to make the character sort of as boring as possible, mm-hmm, you know? Mm-hmm. He went over the top with it, with the performance. I love it. But then Bill Duke, he warns Action Jackson, the Man of the Year award's going to Peter Delaplane, and Action Jackson's cool demeanor suddenly changes.
Uh-oh.
It's like, why don't we just make Charlie Manson a high school guidance counselor?
Back to high school again.
Another weird, and just a weird joke.
It is.
I guess it's a joke. It's not funny, though.
Right, I know.
Nothing really funny. I don't know. But Action Jackson, you can't believe this guy Delaplane is receiving an award. Bill Duke says, you know, I know that Delaplane had some family issues, to which Action Jackson scoffs, says Delaplane's son was a sexual psychopath. Okay?
All right.
Bill Duke says, you know, I know that you take this situation very personally. Action Jackson angrily says that it was Delaplane that cost him his lieutenant rank. Though Bill Duke says, you cost yourself that rank with the way you handled him. You nearly tore that boy's arm off. He says, he had a spare. Okay.
All right.
To me, all of this really begs the question, though, like, why did you pick Action Jackson for this assignment?
It is so unclear. Like, there are so many moments in this movie where, like, I don't know why they're doing this.
Right. I know you hate this guy's guts,
but,
and he ruined your life, but we're going to need you to go in there and make nice.
Oh my God.
We also need to recognize that at no point did anyone argue that Action Jackson isn't guilty of the brutality.
Correct.
And even though maybe the son is pure evil, it's really not a great reason in and of itself to just hate the dad.
Right.
You know, like, as far as we know, the dad hasn't done anything wrong other than have a shitty son.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
So you needed like a line, right, where you could just say Delaplane called the mayor and got me busted.
Boom.
Boom. Okay. It's done. Or like, Delaplane was guilty too, but I just couldn't prove it.
Right.
Something, which is easy to do.
His scumbag lawyers got his son off or, you know, anything. Like that. Yeah.
But so Bill Duke, he gets in Action Jackson's face and says, you know, besides your lieutenant stripes, that also cost you your license to carry a gun, your marriage, and you brought shame on the whole department. Bill Duke says, I'm not telling you to kiss Delaplane's ass, but, you know, I need you to behave. It could be the first step to getting your, like, rank back or whatever. So it was a huge exposition dump from Bill Duke, and he made it, like, entertaining, though, which is hard to fucking do. So later on now at the banquet, a speaker is praising Delaplane before calling him up on stage. And for some reason, his awesome new car is called the Halley. It's like the Halley. It's not called the Comet.
No.
But even they keep comparing it to like the Halley's Comet.
Right.
But it's called the Halley.
Right.
The car.
Yeah.
And it makes no sense to me. And it's the first appearance of that, the phrase, like the hot, hotter, hottest catchphrase, which is apparently like the slogan for the car. Or
yeah, that's right.
And that it never works.
No.
But the crowd cheers. Delaplane is getting up, shaking hands, going to the stage. He makes this horrendous joke and gets like huge laughs about like, oh, I hope the fire marshal's not, you know, upset about my flaming tail.
Oh,
and everyone
God.
Like loses their shit. Like it's fucking showtime at the Apollo and they're like, people are falling out.
Yeah, maybe, okay, can I just say maybe they were laughing at how bad his hair was in this movie?
You were hating on the hair.
Oh, my God. The Craig
T.
Nelson.
It was weird, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was like this weird bleached
like
blonde.
Silvery blonde.
Yeah, like greased back. And it was just.
With the dark eyebrows.
Oh, my
still.
God. It was so bizarre.
It was strange.
Yeah, I think that they weren't laughing at his joke. I feel like that he had literally just dyed his hair that color the day before. Thinking it was going to just
it was literally
going to be the coolest thing. And he gets up the stage and everybody's laughing at his hair.
So Delaplane starts this long-winded acceptance speech as this disgusted Action Jackson is looking on. And he makes the first of two references in this movie to the Library of Congress, which is a lot of that's a lot of fucking references to the Library of Congress.
One is a lot. Yeah.
But yeah, he says something about like when I grew up, my father had a lot of books. It was like the Library of Congress, some shit like that. Anyway, he drones on. Meanwhile, Sharon Stone slides up past Action Jackson, says she can barely hear the speech, and Action Jackson responds, yeah, this is the best seat in the house. She's fucking incredible looking.
Oh, my God.
Even though she had really weird hair.
Yeah, I don't know what what are with these two's hair. Like, it was just bonkers. Yeah.
It was probably peak fashion, like women's fashion in 88 or whatever, but... Yeah. Yeah, Sharon Stone says, you know, I guess you're not a fan of Delaplane, and Action Jackson confirms this. And just then, Delaplane calls his wife to the stage, and lo and behold, it's Sharon Stone, which made me wonder why was she not sitting at the table with him?
Excellent question.
Earlier, but yeah, I don't know. Yeah. She stepped away. So she says, I bet I can make you change your mind about him, but like in a really flirty way. It's kind of weird. And then just the dress is just completely backless. Oh, it was fucking ridiculous how hot it was. So Action Jackson is intrigued by Sharon Stone, as are all of us.
All of us at this point.
Now, later on, Action Jackson, he's talking to some other older guy at the thing, like about some legal theory or some shit. The guy asked Action Jackson, what do you think of Delaplane? And he says, I think he's a greedy, conceited, two-faced, backstabbing asshole. And that's a kind of a reckless thing, I think, to say to someone who you don't know, presumably.
Yeah, exactly. Also, we still don't know that Delaplane is actually any of these things.
Yeah. So the other old guy, though, he seems to also not like Delaplane, right? So now Sharon Stone, she brings Delaplane over to introduce him to Action Jackson, but discovers they're already acquainted. This is where we learn that his name is Jericho Jackson, which is kind of cool.
Which is a great name.
It's a good action movie. A good alliteration.
Gotta love the alliteration. Jericho is a biblical name.
Yeah.
Jackson is just fun to say. Yeah.
So Sharon Stone then asks, "Oh, how do you know each other?" And Delaplane says, "Well, they know each other through his son." Action Jackson then says, "How's the son doing in prison?" And Delaplane's like, "He's adjusting." And Action Jackson says, "He's sure he's making plenty of new friends. All it takes is the right opening."
Oh my God!
Says, which is a single entendre because it means nothing. it doesn't mean anything other than like he's getting fucked.
Right, exactly.
In jail or
it's
whatever.
It's literally just,
that's
you just
the only
need the
thing
one.
It means. That's right. All it could mean. It
doesn't mean anything
it's
else.
It's not an expression.
No, it's not an expression.
So now out of the woodwork then pops up Al Leon, who is Delaplane's driver. It's fucking Al Leon.
I know.
I love that dude. He's Indo and the Lethal Weapon. Yep. He was, what was his name? Uli, I think, and Die Hard.
Uli and Die Hard.
Like, and he was in Big Trouble in Little China. Yep. He was Genghis Khan and Bill and Ted.
Yep, that's right.
He's just
he
an
was.
Awesome stuntman.
Yep.
So Delaplane then calls Action Jackson Lieutenant and then insincerely sort of corrects himself. Oh, it's Sergeant now, isn't it? And then he says, chuckles, walks off like a prick. So clearly there's a mutual dislike, but as far as what we have actually seen, Action Jackson's hate for Delaplane is just strictly based on his son's crimes.
Yep, exactly. And at this point, honestly, Delaplane's behavior is justified because if he's like...
You're harassing me,
right.
What do I do? Like, I get it. My son might be the worst human being on earth,
right.
But that doesn't mean that I deserve police harassment necessarily, right?
Exactly.
But as they walk away, Al Leon gives him that hairy eyeball.
Oh, my God.
Dude, Al Leon's a fucking legend. He's got that look, man, the long hair and the Fu Manchu or whatever.
Yeah.
Did you... There was an Al Leon documentary. Did you watch it?
It's
pretty
fucking
great. It's
really?
Like just about his career because I think he's... I think he's still alive.
Okay.
But he had cancer.
Mm.
I don't think he's passed away because I think I just would have heard about it. But yeah, it was just talking about like how hard it was for like Asian dudes and... in the 70s and 80s when he was getting started, you know, because this dude's like a martial artist.
Yeah.
And like all there really was like henchman type roles and being a stuntman and like in karate flicks and stuff like that, like whatever, Chuck Norris movies and stuff like that. But yeah, the movie's called Henchman, the Al Leong story.
All right.
Totally worth watching.
All right, I'll put it on my
if
list.
You're into it. Yeah. I don't know if it's, it's got to be streaming somewhere. Totally rad fucking movie. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. I think this is enough for chapter one.
It was a lot already.
A lot, but really nothing's happened as far as a plot of this movie.
Nope.
So
we know
it's
that
really not going to change either, I don't think, in the next episode.
No, I really, it doesn't. And all we know about Action Jackson at this point is that he is a really cool, mellow guy that for some reason people are afraid of.
Yeah, the reputation of being a madman, maniac. Right. We haven't seen any of that.
None.
He also hates the guy Delaplane for reasons we don't know.
We don't know.
And there's a couple of murders that have happened that we know nothing
that are completely
about.
Acontextual of anything else, because
they
really haven't, like, only if you're paying attention do you recall that the guy in the first scene is talking about the auto workers alliance and the fact that Delaplane is like his new car
maker.
Right, exactly. But it's such a thin connection at this point, right? I mean, it's just, it's ridiculous. It's still, it feels completely unrelated to the rest of the movie at this point.
I feel like we're even giving false advertising, like as if at some point this plot is going to make sense, because it really doesn't.
No, it never does.
Even by the end, it doesn't make sense.
No.
But we're going to get there anyway. We're going to pour more drinks and we're going to get there. So until then, listeners, enjoy yourselves. Have a good week.
And we'll be back.